My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock. And I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical... But I really want to learn. So, every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know. And then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and here with me today is classical guitarist Valerie Hartzell. Valerie started playing guitar at the tender age of 3, and formally studying at the age of 6. She later studied at the Peabody Conservatory and Radford University. She has performed all over Europe, Canada, and the U.S., She is creator and director of Classical Minds Guitar Institute and Competition. She's part of the Texas Music Festival at the Moore School of Music at U of H, University of Houston, which is actually going on right now through June 28th. She plays big classical shows, but she also does a lot of outreach concerts, such as TV talent shows and playing in the middle of nowhere, Alaska. She lives in Bedford, England right now for some crazy reason, and I've been listening to her 2011 CD, which our very own Todd Holsender produced, called Ex Tenebris Lux. So, welcome, Valerie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I was thinking about classical guitar and how it's really different from any of the orchestral instruments
right.
that, you know, we've talked about quite a few of those on the show. Mm-hmm. Classical guitar is kind of standalone. I mean, you're not playing with an orchestra.
No.
It's a unique instrument. Like, when did it come on the scene in classical music? When
well,
was it, like, the same time as the violin?
We've always been there. Actually, I think I don't want to say we're longer than the violin, but we've been around forever, really. It started in North Africa with the al oud.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so the al oud's been around for, oh gosh, since before Christ, really, since before,
wow.
you know, and before then. And then Europe got it.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, about Middle Ages, early Middle Ages, you start to have a development of the lute.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what guitar comes from, is the beginning with the lute. It's this pumpkin-looking thing. Looks like a pumpkin chopped in half.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's got this pretty little rosette in the front. It's got little tiny holes. That's how the sound comes out.
Uh-huh.
And then it has the neck on it with the giant pegs, and it's usually gut strings on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most instruments, even the violin, all those other instruments, we were basically accompanists to singers and dancers
okay.
through the courts. That's how these instruments became popular. Thankfully, one thing that happened with the aristocrats is they really wanted music. You know, the royalty mm-hmm. wanted music. But we were basically servants of the church or servants of the royalty. And
so
there
said,
is aristocrats.
Dance from a monkey, and then guitarist played.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So that's where that starts. And then you have branches. The lute was considered a aristocratic instrument in Spain.
Uh-huh.
And then the people said, hey, we want our own music. So kind of like the rock and roll of the 1700s.
Right.
It was this instrument called the vihuela.
Uh-huh.
And people said, we want our own instruments. The vihuela came about as the street instrument.
Huh.
And from then, development of the vihuela into the classical guitar, probably by, I mean, I don't have my dates in front of me, but somewhere in the 1700s is now you start getting the modern classical guitar.
Yeah.
And you don't have your first real classical guitar until the 1900s with Tadegus guitar maker. Oh my gosh, I'm going to get laughed at if I can't remember this.
That's right.
It was Targa's guitar builder, and that's when you start having the modern technology of instruments.
Yeah.
Torres. That's it. The Torres model.
The Torres.
I just remembered. Shoo! Okay. I won't get laughed out too hard. But the Torres model was one of the first models in the 19th century guitar that became, I would say, the father of modern instruments. That's okay. From then on, people imitated a lot of the Torres model.
So, like, before then, did the guitar have the same number of strings?
No, you had four for a while.
Okay.
And then they added another, so it was exciting when I had five. And eventually they added the sixth string. Mm-hmm. There used to be sometimes even seven. There's a lot of 19th century music with seven strings. Yeah, it's a problem when you only have six. Because, well, we can't play that seventh string. So you lose a bit of the resonance of the instrument without that seventh string. But
So why like, did they settle on the sixth string model? Like, why did that stick?
Don't know.
Huh.
I have no
That's
idea.
That's so weird.
It is weird. I mean, you can buy guitars. You've heard of the acoustic or, you know, they have those harp guitars, acoustic style steel string harp guitars. Well, they'll have the they'll have the 10 string acoustic style steel string guitars. Right.
Right? Like I've played a 12 string.
Yeah, right. So they have all those. You can buy a classical 12 strings. You can buy a classical with 7 or 8 strings, which are really neat because it's a low bass. It's not so cool. But in general, the average guitar is going to have 6 strings.
Okay, so this instrument comes from way back, and then, you know, early music, Baroque music happens.
Mm-hmm. You have the Baroque guitar.
And then, like, there seems to be that there was some sort of split between the guitar and other instruments that kind of went to be included in orchestras and chamber music and stuff.
Think about how loud a violin is. I mean, I've played with violinists, flute players. Uh-huh. I've played with harp, oboe,
they are so
singers.
Loud.
They are loud.
No offense, violinists. You guys are loud.
They are. And flute is loud. Try playing with a flute player when they're sitting on your left and the hole is shooting towards you and you just feel like your head's going to just be blown off. And it's a fun combination, flute, guitar, voice guitar, violin guitar, all fantastic combos, a harp guitar. Great combinations. Problem is we cannot compete in volume.
I see. So you basically got drowned out by the other instruments, and so the
just
accompaniment just kind of wasn't working.
No, it just wasn't. You'd have, you know, scientifically, 10 guitars at the same time is as loud as you can get. Even if you put 50 guitars in the same room, if you would measure the sound wave, if Todd was to measure that, he would see that 10 guitars is about as loud as it'll go.
Todd, get on that. So then basically when as chamber music comes together and you've got like your sort of typical combination of violin and, and those sorts of instruments.
Established, you know,
and
the
so they basically quartets. Say to the guitarist, they're like, piss off, we don't need you.
Well, you know, the thing of it is guitar became, there was this energetic revival of, well, not revival, but birth, I would say, actually, of the solo instrument in the Baroque period. People were so desperate for instrumental music. They wanted your rock stars of the period. So, you know, the classical guitar, once the Baroque guitar was established, you know, guitar was on the stage all the time until the mid-19th century. Classical guitar, you read the letters of Giuliani and Sor, and they're all over the world.
Not Rudy.
Russian.
I said not Rudy Giuliani.
No, not Rudy
Different
Giuliani.
Giuliani.
Yeah, unless he's a vampire and he's been around for a while.
There is a rumor. Yeah.
So no, Matteo Giuliani. I think it's Matteo Giuliani. Carcassi, all those guys. They were like the rock stars of the age. They would go and play. And they would do these variety shows. So you'd have classical guitars, like the Johnny Carson show back then, you know?
Yeah.
So you'd have classical guitar. Then you have violin and piano and a symphony. And people would just go nuts for these solo artists. Well, it was the most popular instrument in the beginning of the 19th century to probably the mid-19th century. Every young lady was learning the classical guitar. That was the instrument. You'd have one in your living room sitting there.
Right, rather than piano.
Rather than a piano. That was the most popular instrument. It was the education tool.
Okay.
Well, when you stop having people going in the halls and people don't really go on tour as much, you start to obviously lose the visual of the instrument. It's not seen as much. People forget about it.
Yeah.
Then the piano became the most popular instrument, really, of the 19th century. Everybody had a piano. It was the education tool. Everybody who was wealthy and upper middle class could afford some kind of piano in their home. Mm-hmm. Well, people like Tadiga and Yobet and all those guys, they tended to do salon concerts, which are very intimate. Mm-hmm. Our instruments at the time were very powerful. So they didn't feel like going to these big concert halls and being drowned out. You can't really hear them.
Yeah.
So that really killed us until Andres Segovia in the 20th century. Then his goal was to bring it back to the concert hall. Thanks to his, I would say, determination and motivation to get the instrument out there.
So basically the guitar was sort of in danger of becoming extinct.
Yeah.
Because
extinct,
it just wasn't
dwindling.
Being seen.
No,
because
exactly.
It wasn't the popular instrument
right.
to go out and see live.
Exactly. You weren't going to the consoles. You weren't being exposed to it. How are you supposed to know about it?
So who,
you don't have email back then. You don't have internet.
Right.
You don't
have newspapers or no.
Yeah, newspapers. You don't have YouTube.
So who, tell me again, who brings it back and like who's
Andres Segovia is pretty much credit. I mean, there's been some other people like Sanz Lamatha, and you have Alexander Lagoya, and you have Presti, and you have other people. But Segovia is really credited for being the major contributor to recruiting he tried to even recruit people like Stravinsky to the guitar.
So essentially, there was no repertoire. So Segovia is going around and saying, hey, people, write me some music.
Exactly.
So I can do this thing.
Villalobos was a big one. He got Hector Villalobos from Brazil to write him a bunch of music.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh, can you play something?
Oh,
I'd
sure.
Love to hear.
What do you want to hear? Villalobos?
I don't know. Villalobos, yeah.
Is that what you want to hear? You just got excited when I said Villalobos.
I like that name.
Oh,
I don't know.
You like that name? Do you want me to just play a snippet? I mean, it's a really long piece. Do you want me to just play a little snippet of
Villalobos? Yeah, just play a bit.
So Villalobos was a cellist, classically trained, and he learned classic guitar basically on the streets of Brazil. Uh-huh. Rio, and Andres Segovia asked him to write some etudes, so he wrote 12 concert etudes. He wrote 5 preludes and a couple, I think 5 choros, and this is one of his preludes. This is prelude number 1, and you're going to completely hear the cello in this. This is very cello-like. So that was just the last A section. There's an ABA, and I just played the last A section of that. Just
so
give you an idea.
Cool. I noticed that Villalobos invented the power chord. I was watching your fingers and going, yeah, I played that before.
That's a power chord. But notice how he imitates the cello a lot. You know, those long, beautiful. Of course, you can't do that on a cello. But basically, he loves long bass line melodies on the classical guitar.
I loved that. The sort of, I don't even know how to say it, but the juxtaposition of the high notes. I don't know.
Did you notice I was trying to... Do you hear that?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you hear the colors?
Yeah.
That's how we're on. We call ourselves a little orchestra because you can be the little trumpet, and then the normal area obviously is in the box, And then if you want to imitate, say, something warm like a clarinet, then you play on the tosto area, which, you know, I think violin and all the other string instruments have in their scores written ponticello, and I think they can do the tosto too. They can create that tone.
So, wait, tosto?
Tosto.
Tosto.
Tosto, yes.
Tell me.
Oh,
tell
tosto me is when we play over the fretboard.
Okay,
over the
you just said that, yeah. Okay. So you've got Segovia, and he's going around, he's like on this mission to make this instrument like a thing again.
Popular again.
And so he goes to Villalobos and these other people, and the classical guitar repertoire kind of starts being assembled.
Yeah, it becomes popular. People start listening to Segovia play. You have records coming out. Of course, what was before the records? It was those little tiny records. You know what I'm talking about?
Are you talking about like with the cylinders or the 78s?
The 78s, and of course you have the phonograph, right? The 78s, and then you have eventually the record. Mm-hmm. So I think he started out with phonograph. I mean, basically his recordings would have been on phonograph.
Yeah.
And on the radio, and eventually television came out. So now you have more and more social media. People can access the instrument even more because it's, you know, he was on television. I think he was even on the Johnny Carson show. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure, yeah. He was on the radio. He was everywhere. So visibility is what creates popularity. It's like rock and roll.
Sure.
It's very visual pop music. It's visual. Everybody sees it. Everybody knows about it.
What came after Segovia? What's
the next step?
I guess what's the next step? And
his students, he created a bunch of, it's not that he had private students necessarily. I mean, nobody really had the, I could say they really studied privately with him. There's very, I think John Williams was one of the few, John Williams, not the composer, but John Williams, the guitarist, who actually did perhaps have some private lessons. Most of them were master classes, meaning group lessons. So you play in front of an audience and then the master sits there and criticizes you in front of them.
Right.
And those are some pretty epic.
They should call those shame classes.
Yeah. Well, those were kind of shame classes. So Segovia is renowned for not being the nicest guy. He's kicked out some people, and there's some pretty funny ones on YouTube. There's a lot of, there's been like dubs of people talking over him, and there have been some great careers out of that. Obviously, John Williams and Christopher Parkening are the two names that you've heard probably the most. If you take a look at like a tree branch, you would say, you know, the king is Segovia.
Yeah.
And then you have the trickling branches, and you have, you know, people who either studied with them at some point in their lives. And then so you have those branches, and then they have their students. So that was one of his goals. How do you get people to learn classical guitar?
Wow.
We have to bring the instrument to the schools. So now most big universities have guitar programs, and then you have their generation, and you have their generation, and now my age, which we won't say, but my
30.
Generation's coming out. We have so many more, and it's used to be a very male-dominated instrument, and that's changing now. We have a lot more women playing classical guitar.
You know, you play in the Presti Trio, which was the first all-woman group of classical guitarists playing together in the U.S., which is crazy to me.
We could find
the 21st century people,
right? As far as professional that we could find, yes. We couldn't find anybody professionally playing with three women. It was different. It was new.
So you guys were really pioneering in that, like, this is such a new thing that's happening.
Right.
This instrument is new.
Right.
Now you're playing together as a group and as a group of women,
like a rock band.
Who it sounds to me like with a lot of instruments that at one time women played the instruments. It was just kind of a given. You said it was in everybody's living room.
Exactly.
And then for some reason, it kind of went out of fashion for women to play it, and now it's
piano.
Becoming acceptable again. So tell me about like what it's like, first of all, to play with a group.
Well, I have a lot of experience playing with groups of instruments, but and I've played a lot in duo classical guitar, but never trio classical guitar. And I would say the obvious thing would be ensemble. And the thing of it is, it's not like a bow where you can see the person, you know, when they use their bows, you can really see them conduct almost with it. For us, there's no really conducting. I mean, our hands are on the strings. And you can't really move your hand, really.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be like, one, two, three, go. You know, it's not rock and roll. And you can't bob your head up and down because that just looks unprofessional. So you have to develop the art of the sniff.
Really?
Yes.
This is how you cue each other?
There's just, it's a little bit of a pluck. And you hear a, you just hear that and you know exactly when to come in.
That's awesome.
And it's really cool because you hear a tong. We're exactly together. And right in rhythm, right in the rhythm of the 8th or the 16th now. So we know exactly when to come in.
Is it kind of like with chamber music? I know it's very democratic. You've got one person on a part. Mm-hmm. Is that how you play as a group? Or is there like a person who plays the solos and just like shreds while the other people play rhythm guitar?
I'd say it's a combination. Say the Turina that we have, there's 5 dances. So the ones that I arranged for us, I actually learned them on the piano first and then arranged it. I made sure that not just one person got to rip the whole time. I tried to spread the love, so to speak. Uh-huh. But not always. The Toccata Humoresque that Olga wrote for us, for uh-huh. our trio, that what she did, what she had in mind, it was our strengths. And so when she wrote the piece, she made sure to include all the things that she got to learn about us over the years and added it in her piece, and our parts represented our biggest strengths and really showcased our technique that we could do the best.
Could you play some of that? Could you play like what your part is?
I can show you one thing that I do. One of the things that she says that I could do that really impressed her was this trill. Normally when you trill, you use one finger. Or you cross string, like that. But what she saw me do was very fast and very loudly and controlling it. It's a double trill. Kind of maybe almost like electric guitarish, I guess. Uh-huh. But Alexander Lagoya and Presti used to do that. And I studied with Lagoya, so I think I got that from him. My mom got it from him.
That is really cool.
For Lynn McGrath and I, we both do a lot of tremolo, and so. But Lynn's parts goes double speed. I don't remember. She goes super fast, almost mandolin style.
Uh-huh.
There's a percussion section. There's actually an improv section where we do percussion. She kind of wrote down sort of what she wanted us to do. And then it gradually evolved over the year. And then now it's like a complete improv section.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Will you, because we haven't, you've mentioned a bunch of music, but love to hear something like from the classical guitar
repertoire. What would you
repertoire.
Like?
I don't know. Play me something cool.
You want a cross style?
I don't even know what that is, but yes, I want that.
Well, you're supposed I'm supposed to tell you this stuff, right? So how about something that crosses over between genres? So instead of just classical, it's got some jazz and some Cuban and some rock and roll.
Cool.
Kind of. And it's written by a composer I mentioned before, Roland Diaz.
What was the name?
Roland Diaz. He's French-Tunisian, and he's very much alive.
Okay.
So this is called Fire, in Italian Fuoco. And he wrote this after he survived heart surgery. And fire being obviously the element of life, is a celebration of him surviving heart surgery. Thank you.
That was really, really cool.
Oh, thank you.
That was so neat. You're right. And it did kind of cover like a range of styles. I mean, yeah. I heard everything from like rock to like slap bass to like, you know, funk. And
a little bit of Cuban, you know, with
that. Yeah, it's cool.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of dancing there.
Very cool. Thanks for playing that.
Yeah, of course.
So before we go, we have to talk about two things.
Sure.
One, I would love to get your thoughts on where, like, you think the classical guitar is going, because it's clearly evolving so quickly, like, the world and, like, what one does as a classical guitar player, where it fits into the classical music world.
Okay.
And then we have to talk about nail care.
Oh.
So first, what are your thoughts on where classical guitar is going?
As I mentioned before, there's a lot of universities with great classical guitar programs. So you're going to see, I would say, so many more classical guitars than you used to. And so you're going to get more and more universities in need of more and more teachers to keep up with the demand.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing you're going to see is more and more composers writing for the classical guitar, because it's going to become so popular. And we are already seeing that. Not just classical guitarists writing for ourselves, but recruiting other musicians that are not classical guitarists.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with them is they have to learn the instrument, because it's not idiomatic at all. It's a very annoying instrument to write for. So that's one habit. And then the next thing is through social media. As I think I mentioned, you know, my goal is really to make classical guitar this next step. Where do you go with a classical guitar?
Mm-hmm.
Where is the future of the instrument? Where is the future of classical music in general?
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain instruments who are going to be here forever, like piano, violin, you know, the orchestral instruments are just so popular. But what about something like us little guys, like the classical guitar can't play in orchestra? We have to get ourselves out there. And the only way to do that is to cross over. We've got to, you know, that's why I do things like Art Week concerts, and I do silly things like a talent show in East London, because they've certainly never heard classical guitar. I could have spoken, like, I've been Martian alien as far as they were concerned. It was just so different to them. We can't just play for the classical halls. You've got to go out there in the schools and play for the outreach concerts. You can't just say, oh, I'm just going to be a classical guitarist and play in the big halls.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I realize as a touring artist, I see the same kind of audience from one city to the next. I'll say, wow, that looks like that guy I saw the other month. And wow, they kind of all look like the last audience I was in. It's really weird. So
you have to recruit new people to keep it growing.
And how do you do that? You bring it to the schools.
You come onto classical classroom.
Right. Or you come to classical classroom. There you go. But seriously, you've got to go using social media to get ourselves out there.
Right.
That's the new technology. That's the new way to go. That is an absolute must is schools. To go and play for high schools, middle schools, elementary schools.
Mm-hmm.
They dig it. Elementary kids, they don't know anything. They don't know what they like yet.
Uh-huh.
So they see classical guitar and they go, oh, I want to play classical guitar. So if you could just get one kid to join our side of the battle.
Right.
You know,
and
then
that's how it happens for so many classical musicians that I've talked to. It's like, I'll ask them, how did you come to play this instrument? And I'm expecting some story about how, well, my great-great-grandfather played it and it was, you know, it came down to me.
Through the generation.
With the light shone upon. But no, it's like, you know, well, I went to sign up for band and it was the only thing there to play.
Oh.
You know, or I heard somebody playing it and I thought it was cool.
So that's
and
better.
And then it changed their whole lives.
I'd rather have that answer than, well, there was nothing available, so I just decided to play the clarinet.
But even that, just like there being instrument there that they kind of, you know, that like.
But when they're so young, that's the thing about kids. They're just waiting to learn and they're curious.
Uh-huh.
They're not judgmental at that age.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to offer them all these choices of instruments and then you watch where they go, you know, you can really push them through that. It's not until much later as adults, you know, that we start becoming
judgy.
Yeah, judgy with what we like and what we don't like.
Right.
If you go into high school, it's already they're all shy and you know, two people may go, oh, I think I have a question. They don't want to be made fun of. And
right. They get all self-conscious.
They get self-conscious by then. So little kids are just, boy, they're the fun group to play for.
Speaking of self-consciousness.
Yes.
I understand that classical guitarists have very particular nail care regimen.
Yes, we
do. Can you tell me about that?
Nail care, what creates the sound on the instrument.
Yeah.
We get made fun of a lot when we say, oh my gosh, I broke a nail. and they look at you really weird.
It's important.
It is important. It's say, you know, you're an oboe player and you've got to make your own reeds. Or if you're a clarinetist, you need to make sure you always have extra reeds on you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not exactly, we can't just like X-Men, you know, grow a new nail or something. Mm-hmm. We're not Wolverine. So we can carry fake nails with us and glue them on, but they're such a pain.
That's so weird because the rumor that I've heard is that classical guitar players are exactly like Wolverine, that the character of Wolverine was based on classical guitar players.
Oh, so, if only. That'd be so cool. Okay, well, let me show you. I got my metal nail file.
Uh-huh.
I got my 500 sandpaper, grit sandpaper, and then this is the good stuff. This is a 12,000 grit mesh, and it makes your, this is the last thing you use, it polishes your nails into just gold, practically. It's so smooth, it feels like glass. So
and that's important, not just because they look shiny, but because... Because
you don't want resistance on the strings.
Oh.
Because if you play, so the nail file, the metal nail file, is kind of like when you're sawing wood.
Yeah.
And it creates all these little tiny pieces. What it does is it just shapes the way you want. And there's all these guitar philosophies like, well, you should shape it this way. Or no, you should have it more round. Or you should have a slant on the left side.
Are there online forums about how to shape your nails as a guitarist?
Yes.
Wow.
Of
there are philosophies about your nails.
Oh, my gosh. You should just go to a festival, guys. Just go to a guitar fest and then walk around the halls and be, it's kind of creepy because it's a bunch of guys. Not girls. It's mostly a bunch of guys talking about how long their nails are, and should they have them shorter? And what kind of stuff do you use? Do you use a metal nail? What kind of file do you use? Is it glass? Can I borrow your nail file? It's really funny.
That's great.
So yeah.
Well, Valerie Hartzell, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
It was super fun. Cool. You should come back again.
Okay. I'll be back.
Everybody, that about does it for this episode of Classical Classroom. For more Classroom, go to houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, or you can go to our extensive SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/classicalclassroom, or new thing, you can listen to us on Stitcher Radio. Just get an app for your mobile phone or your tablet or what have you. Thanks today to audio producer Todd Terrific Hulslander for making audio magic. To our cameraman, yes, we have a cameraman today, Troy Schultz, for sitting here and listening to us and not laughing too hard at me. To our program director, St. John Flynn, for his Britishness. To Valerie Hartzell for being on the show. To me for saying words. And to you, dear listeners, for listening. We'll catch you next time.